Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Yerjan. I'm a CEO and co-founder of Clockster. I was born and raised in the city called Astana, which is in Kazakhstan, the western part of it. It is also well known as the oil capital of the Kazakhstan, where you have all those major factories that refine and process the oil. So I used to work in the oil industry as well, like from 2008 till 2011, just a bit more than 3 years in the oil industry as a IT help desk engineer. That was the beginning of my career. The point is, at that time, like the major part of the expatriates who were managing the projects were Italian guys. So this is how I was introduced to Italy in general and Italian culture. I was kind of mesmerized on like how they do all those like design related shit, you know, like architecture, current transportation. And as a coincidence, I had a dream to become a car designer. So I decided, okay, like that's the sign, you know, like I was supposed to become a car designer. I work with Italians. Now, like there are a couple of famous Italian schools where I could apply. So I did that in 2011. I joined the Scuola Politecnica di Design, which is in Milan. It is considered to be like one of the most famous European schools of car and transportation design. I studied there for 2 years. The first year was the product, the fundamentals of the product design, and only the second year I studied the car and transportation course. After 2 years. it's a funny story. I don't remember like whether I told you or not. Mm-hmm. I knocked out my classmate just like 1 month before the graduation. so they kicked me out, you know. I had no other choice so to go back home. The point is, you know, like I can't say that I was like so much disappointed, because frankly speaking, after 2 years of studying design, I realized that I don't really want to be a designer, because this is something, I mean, not really boring, but this is not something I would like to do in my life, for the rest of the life, that's for sure. So I got back home. It was 2013. I actually moved directly to the capital of Kazakhstan. I was invited by a friend of mine who used to work with me in the oil and gas industry before. So at that time he was running his own business, like also providing the IT outsourcing for the oil and gas industry companies, as you can guess. And then I worked there almost a year. Then I met my co-founder, Sunil, the Indian guy who was also invited to work with me in that company. The point is, we worked there like almost a year together, and the reason why we quit is that the company went bankrupt, so we had no choice to continue something. And the moment we were working there, like last couple of months, we were piloting a project for a company called Americana Food, which is the owner of the franchises of KFC, Hardee's, and Costa Coffee in Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. We were building the asset management system using the RFID technologies for them. So the project was pretty successful, but we were just like finishing the pilot, right? We were supposed to start the deployment of the whole project. And the company went bankrupt. I called to the head of IT of that company. I told, hey, like the company is going bankrupt, so there is no sense to like receiving the invoices and paying them, because like no one is gonna manage that shit, you know, like so he told me like, hey, why don't you go and register your own company, because anyways I work with you and Sunil, so like I don't know anyone else from that company. I said, really? Like, is that possible? Like, I was actually asking him, and he's like, what, why that? I mean, most probably he was thinking, like, why the hell are you asking me? Like, I'm telling you, go and register the company. I'll continue to work with you. So same time I finished the conversation, I called to Sunil. I said, hey, man, like, this guy is telling us to register a company. What should we do? And he's like, I don't know, man. I think we should listen to that guy. So this is how my entrepreneurial journey started.
Okay.
In IT in general, it was 2014. So we registered the company. Luckily, even at that time in Kazakhstan, registering a company was like super easy peasy, you know, like 5 minutes and you have it. So like in a couple of days, we had our company in hand. So we went to that guy, signed the contract, made our first, it was like 5.6 million tenge. At that time, it was like roughly $40,000 because the currency rate was like 150 per dollar. So it was like pretty decent money. Mm-hmm. That's just for the software development. So like it was like the margin was like 95%, you know.
Yeah.
So we split that money together with Sunil. And like I felt myself like being like a real hustler, you know, like, hey, holy shit, like I can make money.
This was it. You made it, huh?
Yeah. So after that time, like after we made, after we finished that contract, we received another one from them, also for the same amount, almost like $40,000. But that one was much more easier. So we finished that one within 3 months and received like another money. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm unstoppable. You know, like I need to do something. Same time, me and Sunil were like in Astana, and he's a vegetarian guy, like still, like his whole life. Like I call him useless in Kazakhstan. And the problem is like finding a vegetarian food for him in Kazakhstan was a real challenge. So we thought, like, why don't we, like, in general, like, why there is no application that helps to find like specific, like food, you know, like cuisines. Let's say I want to eat something of like, I don't know, Azerbaijani cuisine or like Indian cuisine. And at that time, there was no such app. Like there was this TripAdvisor where you can just find the names of the places, but not the cuisines or dishes or like, I mean, specific type of cuisines.
Yeah.
It wasn't there. So we thought like, let's build such an app. So I went to talk to one of my friends in Astana. Who eventually decided to support us, like a businessman who gave us $200,000. Those were our first seed investments. And Sunil told me, like, hey, you know, like in Kazakhstan, it's actually pretty expensive building any kind of application. So we moved. So he offered to move to India. So I agreed. Like, I took my wife. We moved to India because it was super cheap at that time. Like we rented the house for like it was three-story house villa and like high-end villa, you know, like with the like fully furnished, and the furniture was super new, like because it used to belong to some rich guy who never like wanted to rent it out, but saw like some white face and decided for some reason, hey, I can just like, I think trust this building to this guy. Mm-hmm. So we took that building. It was $650 per month. Like for that three-story building, like pretty huge with four bedrooms, a couple of like there were two living rooms, and there was a terrace on top of the third floor. That was big, you know. So we moved there. We started hiring people. So like we had an office also inside the same building. So we hired people there. Like at that time, like at the peak, we had like 12 people, I think. Yeah. 12 developers. So we started developing that application and like it took us like more than 8 months before we rolled out the first version and realized that I was running out of money. We had nothing for marketing. So like we like launched the app in Astana and realized that we just like can't promote it. So I had to do the business simultaneously, like providing different services like software development to different companies in order to maintain the startup. And eventually like also at certain point those investors, they also told that the problem was that I didn't receive the money like the full amount up front. So they paid me like in kind of like in like parts, you know, like in kind of installments every month. Like every month I used to send them the request with specific, specifying the amount that I need. They used to send me. So like I told them, hey guys, like, you know, that's not going to work like this because we need to, pour the money into the marketing, do some like promotionals, et cetera, et cetera. And like one of them told me like, hey, Jan, I understand everything, but right now we are like experiencing some issues in our own businesses. So let's postpone. Like, can you try to like manage the expenses on your own for like 3-4 months? Then we'll get back to you. I did for 3-4 months, actually for 6 months we were managing the team on our own. But then like I realized that like I just earned the money, like, from the side projects, and like spend them on the salaries. And I realized that like I will never expect, you know, to receive the money from the investors. So I told him, hey guys, like I'm planning to quit. I mean, I'm just stopping this because like it's not gonna work. Mm-hmm. And like that time when we decided to stop, this IT guy called us from Americana Food. It was like it was end of 2015. He told me, hey John, like there is another project. We need to build the time and attendance tool for our outlets, 60 at the time. Can you do that? But the point is we cannot like cover the expenses for the pilot, etc. Can you like arrange it on your own? I said, yeah, no problem. I called to my sister. I said, like, give me like, at that time it was like 250K, I remember, something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, can I borrow like 250K from you? So she sent me the money right away. So we called to, I met one guy who used to be the distributor of the fingerprint devices in Russia. Those were at that time like super advanced. So I ordered these 3 devices. We installed them in 3 locations in Astana. Within 1 month, we built them the first MVP, and that MVP worked pretty well. So like they were super happy, signed the contract. And this is how we started where the beginning of Clockster was. It was 2016 when we finished the project for Americana Food. They were super happy. And we realized, hey, like actually this product, could be scaled. Especially like that time I was thinking about Kazakhstan only. In Kazakhstan, we were the only one who were doing this kind of shit. So I started like searching for new investors, also simultaneously pitching some potential clients. In 2016, I met the guy, our first co-founder, Iman, who eventually led the project. He was the one who actually kind of brought me to the world of the venture capital, etc. Because at that time he was already there, like he knew the how that venture thing worked. So he also introduced me to the Seed Stars organization. Like it's as far as I remember, it's accelerator from Switzerland, and like these guys invited us to participate in their program. We applied in 2017, and we took first place. And I remember like after that pitching session, a couple of investors like approached to me, hey, like I'm giving you money, let's go. And the first one, with whom we eventually decided to work together was Abdrahman, our first investor, gave us a check of 100K. And like, you know, I will never forget that. that story. So like we were in the office, he told me like, hey guys, like come downstairs like to meet me at the coffee shop. So went there, like, and we're sitting like, hey guys, how you doing? Like, hey, I want to invest, like, but I need to go to Almaty. I brought some cash for you up front. And like that was like almost, I don't remember, it was $40,000 or $45,000. So he gave us without any contracts, nothing, like just to kind of show us that he's serious and he's giving the money up front. And the rest, he says, like, I'll be giving you once I'm back from the Almaty. And I said, well, what about the contract? He said, yeah, no worries. Like, I'll be back soon. So that time we'll decide. Of course, like, there was a certain level of credibility because, like, I knew him since 2013. But still, like, $45,000 is not a small money. So, he put that money in front of us. And I remember, like, I was, like, I took the like, you know, that pack of money and was like looking around like, hey, everything okay? I hope like no one is watching at me right now, because and I remember the first thing I told to him, I'm like, okay, like shall we just like move to UK, you know, like escape so no one will find us. That was in 2017. So we started the development of the new version of Clockstar from scratch. In 2018, January, we launched the sales. And I remember within the first 3 months, we onboarded like almost 60 clients. I mean, that growth was super fast. But the point is, I thought like this kind of dynamics will be always like, and it will keep on growing like this, but then realize actually it's just at the beginning that so many people those clients actually that we onboarded were the ones that we already knew like since long ago, like the business owners, et cetera, et cetera. So of course it was easy to approach to them and sell the product, but then like scaling actually the product, the way actually we made it at that time was almost impossible. And I'll tell you why, because the first business model was like that. We used to buy the fingerprint devices from China, but of a different design, the super sleek, like Android based, etc. They looked like a mobile phone, and we used to rent them out for like $50 to $60 per month per location. And at the beginning, this business model looked pretty nice, because like so many different restaurant brands, they had like many outlets, and we thought like, okay, we can like sell this kind of devices in huge numbers, like I don't know, thousands, let's say within a year or so. And the problem is that the logistics, first of all, you need to send those devices. Then we never thought of one important fact, is that people hate clocking in and clocking out. And if it's some kind of like physical device, they'll be destroying it. I mean, like there were so many attempts to destroy the device. So many actually of them, unfortunately, like were returned to us. So we had to fix them, send back, et cetera, and realize that that amount of money that we charge from a client will never cover the costs of those damaged ones. And the point is like the percentage of the damaged ones sometimes reached like 10%. So that was like too much. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't handle it, especially, I mean, not to mention the fact that we wanted to scale abroad. So like we realized that's not going to work at all.
Yeah.
Like we can handle it in Kazakhstan. So we had to do something with that. So eventually we studied other competitors that we had globally. And we saw that like so many of them actually work pretty well using the mobile phones. So we switched to mobile phones as the main product, like turning us into a pure SaaS company. That was 2019 already. 2018 summertime. And same time, I met Adil for the first time. Adil and Anwar, two of them. So, like, I met Adil. He says, like, I like it. We can give you money, but buy the tickets now. Let's go to Almaty. A friend of mine is coming there, Olzhas. So by accident, Olzhas was at that time in Almaty just for a couple of days. He agreed to meet us. And I remember, like, Adil was... you know, like I didn't know how to pitch properly. So in fact, I was just sitting and listening how Adil pitches instead of me to Olzhas. And I remember like his main argument was like, hey, I'm chipping in, like I'm putting my own money there. Mm-hmm. So like, don't worry, man. Like we're just going to split the risks. Get in, come on, like. So we shook the hands and we closed the deal like of 200k that time. So like the total round was 240. I also decided to chip in my own money, because also like running the business that we had, this outsourcing company, also helped me to generate some funds. And I said like, why not? I had some free money, so I decided to invest in my own company. And like, luckily I did that, because we decided together with Adil and Olzhas that we will register a company in Singapore and we'll just deposit all the money there.
Why did you decide on that?
Because they thought like, that we need to go to Southeast Asia, I mean, to scale one day, and having a company and like IP registered to Singaporean company will make you more like sexier, right?
For the industry. The vision to go Southeast Asia was early on.
The point is that time I didn't know anything about Southeast Asia. For me, it was just something like that sounded cool. But in fact, like I wasn't really sure like when exactly we'll be going there. And plus, like I understood that like 240K would never be enough for me to go like abroad.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to say, that's not a lot of funding. So that makes sense. That's quite a fascinating story through a lot of different projects, a lot of different endeavors all over the world, from Italy to India to Kazakhstan to now looking at Southeast Asia. So in general, getting that experience, I'm sure that helped you shape a very global perspective on how business is done in general. But tell us a little bit more about Clockster. You told us a brief story of foundation, how you met different investors, how you guys actually started with hardware. But I understand you guys pivoted into different verticals as well in the HR space. Right. Tell us a little bit more about Clockster and what problem are you guys solving right now?
Mm-hmm. So currently we position ourselves as a staff management platform for frontliners or blue collar workers. You can call it either way. So like since the beginning, we were focusing on F&B and retail and hospitality industries, where you have like businesses managing thousands of blue collar workers. And you know, like how difficult it is, especially in Central Asian countries, like where the digitization didn't went that far in some like in the B2B industries. So we were like the pioneers, like trying to solve the issue related to the automation of the shift scheduling, for example. Like shift scheduling, even today, in like more than like 70-80% of the companies in Kazakhstan still are done using pen and paper, like Excel sheets, etc. And of course, like if you have like at least 100 employees, not to mention the ones that have like 1,000 plus, managing shifts on daily basis is difficult because blue collars have flexible shifts. They never like have the fixed ones, right? Because majority of them are the students. Plus the turnover rate of these people is super high. So like beside the fact that you need to manage the super flexible shift scheduling, there is also a problem with the onboarding of these people, like managing their attendance, because like it is important that if you have like multiple outlets, you need to make sure that these newly coming members of the company are like trained well, and they're at their places right now, like doing their job, selling the products or like serving the people, whatever. And one of the basic problem that we were solving like at the very beginning is the simple attendance. We wanted to help companies just to make sure that people that they hire, they do their job on time. Because like the important thing here is not that they're coming late and they will like pay them extra, like because they were like 10 minutes late, and they don't give a shit about those 10 minutes overpaying. What they care about is how much of money they may lose if the person will be absent for 10 minutes in terms of like number of clients that they may lose. Mm-hmm. So this is a loss of profit. This is like one of the key things that pushes our clients to buy such products. And we like doing this thing pretty well, in sense like within 5 years we learned that you cannot just provide regular attendance. Like I mean, right now talking about attendance, I can tell you that we have become an experts. Why? Because attendance is not just about clocking in and clocking out. It's also about like how it works together with the shiftings, like how you can like manage the shift so that it will inform the people that certain shift starts, so they will not forget to clock in. And plus, like there are the things such as geofencing, which is becoming kind of market standard. Beside the geofencing, there is another thing that is related to the spoofing of the systems, like people trying to send their credentials to their coworkers to ask them to do the clock-ins, etc. We also were able to prevent that. So on top of that, there is another fact, another pain point. People, even if you like send them notifications, etc., they still do tend to forget do the clock-ins, right? And the point is, this is a big problem, because by the end of the month, whenever they need to calculate the salaries, you have a timesheet full of missed clock-ins, full of missed attendance records. And they, like what they do, they manually go through the list and fix them like manually, again, like calling the people, making like asking, like, are you sure you were like at work that time? Checking the video cams, etc. And you know, that part takes a lot, by the way. You know, they need to sit hours managing that. And now imagine like you have like 100 outlets, 1,500 employees. Just imagine, like, of course, no one calls them. They just like, okay, let it be like 5 hours for him. Okay, because like, I agree. And like the point is, there is no transparency, right? There is like there is no precise calculation. So Cloxer eliminates that. And like we just by adding like simple things, like we know whenever people forget, we like at certain time when his shift was supposed to be finished, we record the coordinates of that person and then we send requests to the administrator. Kind of to fill up the gap automatically. So by the end of the month, there is just like perfectly made timesheet that they can use for the salary calculations, which is important. And that's just the attendance part. Now let's talk about the shifting. Like shifting is another challenge that they face. So like in the blue collar industry, there are just thousands of different varieties of how they manage the shifts. There are like rotation-based shift, there are regular shift, there are open shifts, and etc. So like these are like there are also rosters like based on positions. Let's say sometimes they don't just assign like one by one to each person, they just assign by positions. Let's say they just like choose position waiter for specific location and like create six people, and these six people should be auto assigned somehow, like they don't want to manage them manually. So different types of the approaches on how they manage the shifts. And like to date, again, even the bigger companies, they still do the shiftings using the pen and paper. I mean, we're talking right now about Central Asia and Southeast Asia. So we've been studying this. We studied like the most advanced shifting tools like Seven Sheets, DPT from the US and Australia were like considered to be like one of the best. So we realized like what exactly they were offering. And we realized that these things were not offered in Southeast Asia. And we started like building them like super fast. And we're able to achieve certain, I mean, like we were able to achieve the level of those companies. Plus we made certain things on top of that, which like make us more advanced. For example, like with DPT, you can like manage only like one person at a time. Like, let's say there is a like outlet, you create a position and you assign one person. And now, because like they mostly work with SMEs with like 10, 15, 20 people in one location. We like with our system, beside that, you can manage like multiple people simultaneously. Like we since the beginning knew that like we need to give like more flexibility to people, because in Southeast Asia, the way they manage blue collars is not like the way it works in the Western countries. They just like you know, like this will not be this is illegal the way they manage the blue collars, you know, like, right. But the reality is the reality, right? So we still need to provide the things that they require, like they demand in this market. So that's why we had to be more like specific and more flexible in terms of shiftings. So one of
was
them,
it,
by the way,
was like, it challenging for you and your team to adapt the existing technology to those local regulations, local ways of doing things? Talk a little bit about that from the perspective of pivoting and adapting your technology, your infrastructure to be able to, you know, accommodate local ways.
That was actually pretty challenging, because like we were piloting with like multiple big brands with like 60 plus outlets and like 500, 600 and 1,000 plus employees. Mm-hmm. And the HR admins of those companies, like they were telling different things simultaneously. So like one person used to manage the shifts on like their own way, the other ones like they had their own standards. And the point is, we had to find something in between to balance it, to make sure that like the tool that we are providing is going to fit like all of them. So that was the most challenging thing. And eventually, like, we were able to achieve that. And it took us, like, actually, we worked really hard. Like, we spent, like, more than 6 months customizing the product. But now, like, after we've done so much of things, we know that we actually can, like, quality-wise, we are getting closer to those market leaders. I mean, like, in the European countries, such as DPT and Seven Sheets. But the point is, we are in Southeast Asia, and DPT is not in Southeast Asia. So we might become like a DPT in Indonesia, for example. Because, like, even though the competition here, the landscape is incredibly huge, like 30 plus like similar solutions that are trying to solve more or less similar things, we can, I mean, I can definitely I can put my hand on my heart and, like, tell for sure that we can put us in the list of, like, top five, like, best solutions here in this market. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I really do study a lot. I really do a lot of comparisons on, like, how they solve and how they approach to the problem solving. And we see that, like, we have a huge potential here. It's just because, like, we chose, like, a right strategy, the customization. And the point is, for us, the timing was good, because, like, the older solutions that were here, like, since, I don't know, like, 7, 8, 10 years ago, they already built their architecture, right? The changing for them is not possible. Like, I mean, it's going to be really difficult to change immediately, because the processes are changing. The approaches to how they solve the problems is changing. And for us, it was easier because, like, we came to Indonesia with pretty, like, simple architecture, and it was easy for us to adapt, to rebuild the things from scratch and make something that is now more advanced than what Southeast Asian solution provide. This is, like, one of the important things. Another thing is that we conducted lots of the customer development sessions, like, trying to figure out what's the most demanded tool that comes along with the staff management. And we figure out that was the payroll. So, like, in Southeast Asia, payroll always considered to be as part of staff management. Like, the point is, in the European countries, like in Australia, New Zealand, in US, in the UK, you can have, like, a shift scheduling separately and payroll separately. And there are, like, lots of easy ways of integrating them. In Southeast Asia, they hate this story. They say, like, we need all in one. And, like, before coming to Indonesia, we received that kind of signal from the local players and local clients. And we decided to invest money and resources into development of the payroll. And eventually we were right, because right now, like, we can't see our further development in this country, in this market, without the payroll module. Like, for example, our, like, one of the biggest competitors here, it's called StaffAny. It's a Singapore based startup. This solution is pretty decent. Like, it's really of a high quality. However, for some reason, they decided not to pursue that goal of the development of the payroll, because they thought, like, that they will be able to bring the standards of Singapore, Australia to Southeast Asia. I mean, to those countries, and it just doesn't work, you know. Like, whichever you have in Singapore, it just doesn't work in Southeast Asia, because culture and mindset is different. Yeah. People already used to certain rules. So you have to obey them and you need to adapt. And those guys, instead of adapting the product, they eventually decided to impose their own rules, and it just didn't work. And now, like, as I know, they're laying off the staff. They laid off their, like, regional directors, both in Indonesia and Malaysia. Now they're struggling raising funds, the CSB, because, mm-hmm. like, the point is, their, like, business model is pretty simple. They sell, like how much is that? Like $40 per outlet per month, which is pretty cheap, right? At the same time, they don't have, like, those, like, break dealing Oh, sorry, deal-breaking features like payroll to onboard like with a bit faster pace. And like eventually they just cannot cover their own cost because their burn rate, I guess like it's much more high than what we have. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's because like the developers are in Vietnam and like a major part of this stuff there, it's Singapore. So
that's an interesting point you bring up, because especially when you enter a completely new market, there's different ways of doing business. There's different ways of buying. There's different ways of just communicating in general. So how did you guys approach that, knowing where you guys are going, knowing the complete, you know, new complexities of a brand new market like Indonesia? It's one of the largest markets in Southeast Asia, and it's a very close-knit country in the sense of how people buy, how people do business, and all of that. Mm-hmm. So before going into that, how much research did you guys do? And when you actually entered the market, talk a little bit more about the process of that discovery. How did you actually approach, you know, just overall day-to-day communication? The reason I'm asking that is because we have a lot of other founders who are listening to our podcast, and they are always curious about ways of entering new markets. How do, you know, essentially you approach that? How do you prepare for that? How do you pivot? What are the different things to account for? Maybe spend some time talking about that process.
All right. So, like before going to any market, like I realized one of the best tools to test anything is the platforms such as AppSumo or Product Hunt. Like in our case, the AppSumo. So like it's a platform where you can publish your SaaS product and like offer the lifetime licenses, for example, for a certain period, let's say like 3 months of promo lifetime licenses you sell. So we published, it was 2021 spring. Was months of March, as far as I remember. So we published there, like, and within 3 months, we sold out 162 licenses. Like, wow. Yeah, that was pretty decent, like, with an average price of, like, $60, as far as I remember. Mm-hmm. Up to 100 employees, we used to sell, like, this much. And, like, almost, like, one-third of the licenses were coming from, half of the licenses were coming from Southeast Asia, and in total 30% of those licenses were coming from Indonesia specifically. I mean, like the buyers who came to the platform and purchased the licenses. So like we thought, hey, like seems like there is a kind of a demand in Indonesia for such tools. So we tried to actually reach out to a couple of these clients. First thing that we realized that the market is super price sensitive, even though there are lots of players in the market. The only thing that they can fight with is the pricing, because the solutions like that, I mean, the way the things that they used to provide to the clients, they were like pretty similar, right? So also we started like, okay, we thought, okay, Indonesia could be like one of those like regions where there is a high demand for like time and attendance and shifting applications. Also realized Indonesia is actually the biggest country in terms of population in Southeast Asia with like 280 million of people, right? Then we also learned that there are like lots of Japanese and Korean companies who entered the market opening the restaurant businesses, or F&B and retail and hospitality businesses is like one of the biggest in the region. So like, and that is actually our targeted audience. So beside that, we were studying the products that were in the market at that time. And we realized that out of like 30 companies, you can just narrow it down like to four or five, like more or less decent products with whom you can like fight. And like, I think being the number five or number six in the market of 280 million, I think for me sounded pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought like we have like pretty good chances. On the other hand, we realized that it's not the US, right, where you need to come with huge amount of money and invest in the marketing, like pouring like here and there, you know, like the gold. In Southeast Asia, like the cost of living was much more affordable. Mm-hmm. Also, the marketing costs here are much more cheaper. So we thought, like, why not to try? So we remember, like, in 2001 when we first came here. Ah, sorry, it was 2022 when we came here. We launched a promotion, lifetime up to 100 employees. Mm-hmm. So, like, just giving it for free totally, like freemium actually, up to 100 employees. So that helped us to onboard over 200 companies. First of all, like, we proved that, yeah, the demand is huge, because like there is a belief that even if you sell like cheap or free solution, if it's shit, no one's gonna buy it or like, mm-hmm. I mean, register. But like, we received lots of registration, and like having like 200 and something registered actively using companies, that was something that was telling us, hey, like, there is something in this market. Then also, there was another thing, like, pretty surprising that happened, and we still don't know what to do with that. Like, in months of June, we onboarded over 75 schools, public schools, in just one single city called Pasuruan. And then within the next 3 months, there were like more than 40 new schools that were joining in the same city. So now, like, all the schools in that city are using Clockster. And like, wow. they were using that promotional period, like up to 100 employees free. And like, by the way, they're like super active. They use the shifting tools for their teachers. By the way, they don't use it for kids. They use it for teachers. And then, like, after, like, it was months of September last year, when we just within a couple of days, more than 80 kindergartens from the same city got mm-hmm. registered.
Oh, wow.
And we're like, what the fuck is happening? Those wow. were also the government, the public kindergartens. So like, we decided not to, I mean, we tried to reach out to them. It was like pretty difficult, because they said, like, we are pretty happy with this freemium, so we're not planning to buy anything. And we also decided to not to push them, because like, they are not really our like targeted audience. However, in the future, we might consider them. At the same time, we kind of understood that there are a lot more niches in this country that we can cover, like, beside the F&B in retail and hospitality. Mm-hmm. And then after we moved to this country, I started like personally meeting the potential clients, trying to understand the pain points. And this is like, actually, this is why Clockster is Clockster. After like studying them, they told, hey, like, there are lots of similar solutions. But the main problem is that, like, for example, the attendance, which I remember told you about, this missing clock-ins, like, they provide this attendance, but then like, I still need to do a lot of manual shit. So right. like, eventually for me, there is no sense buying such a tool and just, I'll just use the like pen and paper, or the shifting, for example. Our biggest competitor, Talenta, their shifting solution is pretty basic. And like, in one of the companies, like Decathlon, for example, which is the chain of sportswears, it's like pretty big. It's headquartered in France. They have like branches here in Indonesia, and their HR guys told me like that they use Talenta, but they use only the payroll tool. Why? Because their shifting tool just doesn't really fit their needs, because mm-hmm. What they needed is the open shift system. It's like, when you create, let's say, open shifts, and say you need like 7 cashiers, like 10 salespeople, like a specific location, specific hours, and people just apply themselves. Okay. And we have that feature, you know, like, so like this kind of things. Then for example, like, we also provide the facial recognition devices, like, optionally. Why? Because like, in the blue collar industry, when you work with the blue collar workers, sometimes they just like either don't have the phones, I mean, the elder people, or they have very old ones. And like, in order to solve that problem, usually companies buy the biometric devices. So we buy the facial recognition devices, but not the fingerprint. We told, like, with fingerprint, like, you don't need to work, because like, there are lots of problems, right? You need to enroll their fingerprints. You know, enrolling a fingerprint of one person takes from 3 minutes, if you are like super experienced, to like 5 to 10 minutes sometimes to enroll one person. Now imagine you have like 1,000 people. And the point is, on a monthly basis, there is huge turnover. So new people will be coming. You need to enroll them. You have to enroll them. And then, you know, like, after some time, you need to understand that the pattern of the finger changes, you know, like every 3 months, you need to re-enroll. sometimes they damage the picture of the fingerprint. You need to re-enroll. So like that's hell of the manual work involved. And plus, it's like in terms of hygiene, is not really cool, because like people, you know how they do. They just stick their fingers in their nose and then like punch the fingerprint machine. And like people hate that. And so we started offering them also facial recognition devices. And the cool thing is that we just decided not to stop there. We decided, okay, we provide you facial recognition device. At the same time, we don't want you to be involved into the enrollment of these people. So we built in this additional request for the, like in our app, when employees can take a selfie, and there's like even the tutorial how to take a selfie, and send the request to the administrators. So administrators just check, okay, yeah, I know this person. Yeah, this is his face. Approve. That's it. One click. It takes like 1 second for him.
Nice.
So like instead of enrolling physically, et cetera, being in that, so our main vision is that we want to provide the tool that will over time reduce the amount of hours that they spend on routines. Like another feature, for example, that we have, we also we came out with that idea after talking to several clients, is that like they have a bunch of people, let's say like one of our biggest clients here, Imados, they have almost 90 outlets. And every day there is a person who goes to the outlet twice a day with the checklist on the paper and checking the temperature of the fridge, the equipment, it's clean, whether it's working, then like they check the sink, everything. Like there is a huge list, and the point is like he just like marks the check boxes, and that's it. And the point is he don't know like whether he really did that at work, checking everything one by one, or he was sleeping at home, like woke up, fixed everything, and just send a picture of how he's done the work, right? So the problem for them, like, you cannot track. So we added like the tool called recurring tasks. So you create the checklists, you save them as a template, so you can like reuse them like anytime, right? You can assign to simultaneously to multiple people, and you can specify the time when to start and when it's going to be come to an end. So like every morning, you will receive notification that you have a task that you need to perform. And once you open, you see the checklist. And when you mark the checklist, we like on the back end, we also save the coordinates of that person, making sure that he's at location. Also, he needs to take a picture. I mean, not to attach any picture, but only using his camera to attach the picture as a proof. Add the comments, and then once you finish all the checklists, it will generate automatically the report with the location, I mean the on the map, with the pictures attached, with the comments, with the and there is like built-in discussion, like a chat. So like if there is something that you need to discuss, it's always there. And like you can like either to like share this with your line managers, or like download it into PDF and send it like elsewhere. So like this kind of, because like before they used to take a picture and send it to the WhatsApp groups.
Wow, it was very labor intensive. And I like what you're talking about, just overall focusing on streamlining the operations, the administrative tasks, and all of the things that are going on as part of their routine, because they really need to be focusing on other more important tasks. And solutions like Clockster is able to streamline that entire operations from that standpoint. That's great. That's very exciting. And you also shared some of the strategies that you took into account when entering a new market, such as leveraging the platforms for validating the interest for an application like yours. So that's a great advice. So Yerzhan, in conclusion, maybe spend a little bit of time talking about what is next for Clockster, where you guys are going, what is the maybe shorter term objectives that you have set for the company, and just share overall vision for where the company is moving towards to.
Well, I'll start from the short-term vision. For the next couple of years, we are planning to enhance our product, build like additional features that will be aimed to focus around the F&B and retail industry businesses only. Because that right now, there is no solution in the world that focuses specifically on these industries, like trying to solve like the daily routines of these business people, because those are different. And the approaches that we have to offer, they should be also be aligned with the business processes of this company. So we want to become a market leader of staff management in F&B, retail and hospitality industries, providing like all the necessary tools to be like kind of, so let's say, like there are tools like made specifically for, I don't know, like for construction companies, for like for the space industries. We want to be staff management for F&B, retail and hospitality only. Like we want to become champions in that area, and once we will able to reach certain level of development here in Indonesia, once we'll settle down, once we'll like build our pipeline properly, we might start expansion towards the nearest European countries such as Australia, New Zealand, and we actually will meet like a real big competitors such as Deputy, for example, who are like recently announced that they reached 100 million ARR, which already proves that like they know how to run the business. They have like a huge brand awareness in those countries. However, we still believe that our approach is more specific, and we will be able to easily compete even with them in their markets. Talking about the long-term vision, so one of the problems that we also would like to solve is the hiring of the blue collars. Even though there are many startups who are like doing this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. We believe that in like F&B, retail, hospitality, SME segment, it's quite complicated. Like you cannot just build an outstaffing company and just start like outstaffing people, because those people usually like don't hire in big numbers. They are not ready to pay huge margins. So instead, what they actually wouldn't mind to do, as we think, is to buy the automation tool to streamline these processes of hiring these part-timers to their companies, like for a lower price than what the market offers right now. And like we see that like 80% of SMEs in F&B, retail and hospitality businesses, but I'm talking about SME, right? 80%. They're like almost not digitized, like not using anything. So like our first mission is just to provide them the staff management as a kind of like fundamental tool. And on top of that, we can offer them the tools to onboard the people. I mean, like for like as a part-timers, for example. I'll tell you as an example, like, sometimes like we have a couple of clients currently, and like every week they sometimes they don't have enough people, so they need to hire like the part-timers. What they do, they go to the WhatsApp chats like that they have like with like 2,000, 3,000 people in there. They just send message there, hey, like tomorrow for like from 11 a.m. till like 2 p.m. we need like three people for a position of a waiter, like we pay this much, who agrees? And then like one person says, okay, I'm in. Then the other one, I'm in. Then like after 3 hours, one person changes his mind. The point is, beside that, you need to consider that there is lots of other discussions are happening. So you need to make sure that you will remember who was writing what, right? So our OpenShift tool, for example, can easily automate that process. Mm-hmm. So like what we want also to, but the point is, this is still a hypothesis, but we see that demand is there, because like right now they do these things manually everywhere. Yeah. And with our existing tools, we can just automate that. And instead of charging like huge amounts, like 8 to 10% of the margin, we can just like, I don't know, ask for like 3% instead. And it still mm-hmm. will be like a lot, because the SME segment here is huge.
That's crazy. No, that's exciting. And I mean, that makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at the key ingredients of successful startups, successful companies. Number one, what they really focus on is on that specific problem that they solve for their, you know, end user, for their clients. And your value proposition is very clear in this instance, where you essentially focus on a lot of the automation, a lot of the streamline of the operations, a lot of that manual labor that goes on, especially the time wasted going back and forth. I can definitely see how that makes a lot of sense for the companies that do decide to get into business with Clockster. So in conclusion, I like to ask, you know, every founder, from a perspective of everything that you've learned to date, and just as an advice, or maybe a series of advice, as an experienced founder, especially the one who've done business, who've scaled in different markets, what are some of advice or words of recommendation that you can offer to other founders, other startup entrepreneurs who are looking to build a similar technology, maybe in different vertical, but also looking to go into a completely different market?
Like recently I was thinking to myself that confidence, if you are in a team of you have a bunch of teammates, right, to whom you also internally need to prove certain hypotheses before you start the development of them, right, in order to make sure that they will be willing to do that. And sometimes when you are not able to prove the necessity of certain things, people are doing it unwillingly and the quality eventually will be super low. Mm-hmm. So in order to avoid that, since the beginning, you need to implement the rule. I mean, it's a little bit arrogant. I mean, sounds like I'm a super arrogant person, but at the early stage, before you reach the growth, or at least Series A, for use for yourself and for the team, there should be one rule. CEO is always right, even if he makes the mistake. CEO is always right, but have the rights for the mistakes. That's it. Because there should be always a person to whom you believe, whose vision is even though it's not perfect, but at least towards the right direction. And you need to be supportive, because right now, all those features that we were supposed to implement 2 years ago, and we kept on postponing them. Now we see the urgency of having them. If we would have them 6 months ago, that would help us to close some of the deals much more faster. And the point is, what's happening right now, that 90% of those things that were supposed to be done, I was right about them at that time. And I wasn't confident enough in my own vision. So that's why I wasn't imposing this. So I kept on moving here and there, trying to find the compromises between me and the team and also the general vision, because this is also important in some companies. You can be super strict and try to just tell the people, hey, I don't give a shit about your own opinion, we just need to do it. But the point is, in this case, there is a risk that people will just leave you at some point because they will think that you're super stupid and arrogant. But you need to tell them one thing, just to explain. At the beginning, till a certain level, CEO is always right, but have the right for the mistakes. So if mistake is there, most probably it will not be severe, but you need to support the CEO, because either you support the CEO with the vision and eventually that vision is correct and you become successful, or you don't believe in that vision, but then you will be delaying the growth. No, CEO is always right, having rights for the mistakes.
That makes sense, especially in the very early stages, because at the end of the day, it's you are the captain of the ship. You need to set the direction where the ship is going. Everybody else who joins the company is helping, either steer the ship or making sure everything else is functioning on board. But at the end of the day, you're the captain, you're setting the direction. So that makes a lot of sense from the advice for other entrepreneurs. Yerzhan, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was a very insightful conversation. Very excited to learn more about Clockster, especially dominating and operating in a completely different market. That's very challenging. That's not easy at all. I know personally how hard it is. So definitely kudos to you and your team being able to operate not only in Kazakhstan, but also entering completely new waters. So keep up that great work there. What I love doing with all the podcast guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year to see where everything we've discussed, if it still makes sense, still applies. So I'm looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Yeah, I'll be happy to, by the way.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.